The act of giving is a way to destroy stinginess that is excessively present within us. As Buddhists, we may go to offer alms on Saturdays and Sundays, going to rural areas or in the cities where the monks go on alms round. In the early morning like this, with such pleasant weather, our minds feel bright and joyful. Cooking rice to offer as alms, the feeling becomes uplifting and fulfilling, a sense of inner fullness. For those who can do it regularly and consistently, it's not easy. Some people wake up at 5 o'clock every day, cook rice, prepare offerings for alms, buy food to offer as alms, and this brings a sense of fulfillment and happiness during this time. It's a way to develop the mind. If it's compared to a tree, it is a tree with thick leaves, lush, green, and full. It's the opposite of stinginess. Stinginess exists in many forms. One may be stingy regarding one's dwelling, being possessive of one's house, temple, the monastery, and the places one owns, not wanting others to come and live there together. Or one may be stingy within one's family, being possessive of one's own lineage as well, not wanting others to have any honor in our family, not wanting them to be involved at all. This too is a kind of possessiveness. Sometimes one is possessive regarding gains of all kinds, regarding material support and benefits, being possessive of property and possessions, offerings and honors, not wanting others to come and share in the benefits, or even with goodness itself, the goodness and knowledge that one has. One is possessive again, not wanting others to have virtue like oneself, not wanting to pass it on to anyone, not wanting others to have knowledge. This is possessiveness in terms of knowledge. It's a more subtle form of stinginess, and this too is a defilement. Especially those who already have a foundation in the Dhamma, yet don't want to spread them further, fearing that others may gain merit and wholesome results, and have more wisdom than themselves. This is probably still worldly wisdom. This carries considerable harm. The harm is the harm arising in the present, or harm in a future existence. If we are very self-centered, we'll have no friends, no true companions, because our minds are narrow or lacking in loving kindness. If we speak of the practice of cultivating merit, there is also suffering and worry, fearing that the wealth one has will be gone and depleted. Like in the present world, if others have more than we do, then jealousy and envy may arise. As for a future existence, they are causes and conditions as well. After dying, if possessiveness remains, one may come to guard one's wealth. Yes, they come to guard the wealth and possessions, becoming a hungry ghost guarding wealth and possessions. We have probably heard of such things. After death, as a human being, there can be rebirth as a human, but with scarcity of wealth and a narrow mind. Like a rich man who didn't make merit or give alms in the time of the Buddha, after dying, he entered into the womb of a beggar. Wherever the beggar went to beg, wherever the mother carried the child in the womb to beg, she couldn't obtain anything. The leader of the beggars was clever, so he divided them into groups, splitting them up again and again, and thus realized that this pregnant woman clearly had a problem. The child in her womb was a problem. So he let her stay in his place and had others go out to beg to support her. But wherever this beggar mother went to beg, she couldn't obtain anything either. This is the result of stinginess. It manifested in the child who was born. After the child was born and grew up, the mother told him to take a coconut shell and go out begging by himself. so they went their own ways. Staying with the mother would make her suffer. Thus the beggar wandered about in a disheveled state until he reached his own house, and then he remembered that he had once been a rich man who buried his wealth. The Buddha, seeing this, showed compassion and smiled. Venerable Ananda understood and therefore asked. The Buddha then said, "This was a rich man who was extremely stingy. He never gave alms to anyone. After dying, he suffered like this and became a beggar." When he entered the house, his son didn't recognize him, having been born into a new existence, so the son drove him out. But the Buddha, out of compassion, then told the rich man's son, "This is your father. After dying, he has become a beggar." At this point, how could he easily believe it? Even though the Buddha spoke, he still didn't believe. So the beggar had to prove it. He showed where the valuables were buried here and there. There were many things that were buried. The rich man's son therefore believed that this truly was his father. This young beggar was thus able to escape from hardship through the loving kindness and compassion of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha. But many others who did not receive such compassion became hungry ghosts, guarding wealth, or were born as poor people, because they themselves had never made merit or given alms. The things in this world that we obtain and accumulate, once we breathe our last, they become other people's possessions. At best, our children and descendants inherit them, and we feel at ease. But what is it that goes with us? What is it? It is goodness. It is merit. Wholesome deeds. It is like when we travel a long and difficult journey. We must have food and provisions for the journey so that it will not be tough. We travel in the cycle of samsara, the round of birth and death. We do not know where it will end, so we therefore can't be careless. We must prepare in advance, first cultivating the perfection of giving. Sometimes we can't cultivate the perfection of giving, or it's difficult to do. Then we think of the Buddha, how he was able to do it, sacrificing and cultivating the perfection of giving in every existence and every life. Especially in the great life as Prince Vasantara. How could he do it? Making the highest sacrifice, because it was for the goal to attain to perfect self-awakening. He was able to give up even his own children and his queen, his former queen. Oh, how could he do such a thing? But he did it in order to attain Buddhahood, which is a virtue that a Buddha must sacrifice for. But we aren't to that extent. We simply make our giving according to our ability, not giving to the point that we ourselves suffer or create turmoil in our lives or in our families. It's not like that. We give to a reasonable extent, as much as we're able to sacrifice. Now, when we practice giving, the person who gives becomes beloved, like King Sudassana. In the suttas, it says that he possessed immense wealth, yet he was not possessive of it. He distributed his wealth to the people, and the people respected and revered him throughout the city. And then, in the end, he attained the Dhamma. This was because he was able to overcome his defilements and to sacrifice. Seeing that life is uncertain and that death is certain, we must surely die. The final end of life is death. Thus, he was able to give. Those who don't practice giving are far from heaven. Heaven is a realm of happiness. That is, the mind itself becomes happy first. The mind itself is heaven. It's not that heaven exists in some realm. heaven exists in the mind. Stinginess is in the mind. When one can let them go, then heaven arises, happiness arises, a sense of fulfillment arises, and we can verify this within ourselves. So one who lacks wisdom is unable to do this. A foolish person grieves, and after dying does not give away his own wealth, but comes back to guard it again. This is what is called a person without wisdom. So a person with wisdom knows how to give a portion of the wealth they have. 1/5 of it is taken to create goodness for oneself. Those who cannot give will suffer. They won't have close friends or companions, because our lives are uncertain. When we give more and more, then it becomes that, in this life, what do we really want? We have abundant wealth. What are we going to use it for? We don't really want anything. We want to make merit, to give, to sacrifice. Why is that? Because this life is already uncertain. Yet we must still keep a portion to sustain ourselves, to support our family, to use when we are ill, to help relatives. This part we must keep so that we don't suffer hardship. But that one portion, we take it to build our goodness, to cleanse the stinginess. There's some people that have wealth. They have friends, but those friends haven't got a home. The friend doesn't have a home, while they have one already, and even another house as well. With the keys in one's pocket, one feels that the keys are hot. Yes, they suddenly feel hot, feeling that one can no longer refrain from giving. He then decided to give that key to his friend. Here, you take this house. Go live in it, both husband and wife. This is what is called the practice of the perfection of giving. His mind became open and clear, light and comfortable, happy that he was able to do it. And the one who received it was also very happy, deeply fulfilled and joyful, becoming a true close friend and companion. This arose from the merit of the giver who had wisdom, and the receiver must also have had merit from before as well, having been someone who had given before as well. In this life, there are people who can come to give to us. It's not that there's no accumulated virtue. They too must have accumulated virtue. Therefore, we must strive to contend with defilements and craving, which leads us to wander in the cycle of birth and death, not knowing when this round of existence will ever end. Everyone who is born understands this. We all have desires. We want to be wealthy. We want power. We want the admiration of others. Wanting all of these things, craving is like that. There's nothing inherently wrong with it, if we act within the boundaries of morality. But we often see in the news that people who have craving as well will do everything in order to obtain things, having great greed. And what happens then? They hold high positions and have greed. But in the end, the wealth they obtained doesn't remain, and their own lives cannot remain either. Why is that? Because it is bad karma. When bad karma gives its results, one's wealth is exhausted, and one's life is exhausted as well. This is going astray, going off the path. Coming from a bright place, with reputation and status, with rank and title, one can still go astray. They go astray under the power of greed. Isn't that frightening? So being able to abandon greed little by little, this serves to protect us. We don't desire what belongs to others, right? And we can even give what belongs to us. Such a person is called one who has morality. who has the qualities of generosity and morality, who has concentration and a certain level of wisdom. So we must always train ourselves in this way, and reflecting on life that it is uncertain like this. When we practice giving more and more, we feel fulfilled, happy, joyful, and uplifted. This means our minds have changed, showing that heaven, saga, is in the mind. We see that external possessions have very little value, and we feel that the inner sense of fulfillment has great value indeed. We no longer need to accumulate a great deal. Just enough to live without hardship is sufficient. And we cultivate meditation and practice. No matter how much or how little we have, we wish to make merit, to give and to sacrifice. Like us here, we come together with virtue and morality, gathering as a community of moral people, with sharing everywhere, with giving everywhere, faces smiling and bright. Whatever there is, we say, come and eat here. There's rice, there's water, there's food. We share it with them. If we have knowledge, we give it to them. We give advice. It brings fulfillment, happiness, and joy to the heart of the giver. Just like when all of you lay people have the opportunity to offer alms like this, you feel like having given, you are happy. And when we look at children, sometimes the children, they also give, and they feel pleased and want to give. This disposition has been there since birth. A disposition from birth, they want to give alms, and they feel joy in their hearts. Here, the receiver isn't only one who receives, but also one who gives, giving knowledge, giving advice. When the Sangha, the monks, receive, they must also be givers to all the lay people, giving guidance in practice, giving guidance in restraint, giving morality, practicing the Dhamma, concentration, wisdom, chanting and meditation, and maintaining proper monastic conduct. So that is delightful and uplifting for those who see them, that seeing a renunciant itself is an auspicious thing. The outer renunciant is one who restrains body and speech. The inner renunciant is one who restrains body, speech, and also the mind. This is even more auspicious for our lives. Thus, we are able to practice in accordance with the renunciant, following their advice that they have taught, giving, letting go of self-centeredness, letting go of ego and self-identity, little by little. In this way, we abandon conceit and wrong views. In this way, the teachers also teach firmly that, even when living together, one shouldn't be selfish, but practice generosity and self-sacrifice. If one is a monk and a communal duty arises, then everyone comes together in unity, helping one another, because we live as a community. When there is an ordination ceremony, we come together to perform the ordination, doing it in harmony and unity. Do not be shifty. Do not be evasive. Don't make excuses or avoid it, saying this or that. Come together. Why? Because ordination has great merit. A person who comes to ordain in the Buddha's dispensation, even for 1 month or 3 months, gains great merit. It is a continuation of the life of the religion. Once ordained, one comes to learn and understand, becoming someone who understands and can then go on to guide and teach many others. So those who come together to ordain gain merit, even greater than giving, which itself is more difficult to do. After ordaining and cultivating meditation, it becomes even more difficult. If one attains concentration and peace, one sees the benefit of having moral discipline and of giving, that we can do it. So, in summary, where does stinginess come from? It comes from ignorance. If there is wisdom, one can abandon stinginess. When greed arises excessively, it creates problems for the mind. Everything becomes constricted and oppressed. One cannot do anything. One cannot sacrifice anything. In the end, one dies in a sorrowful and painful way. So for all of us as well, even if we have past bad karma, we can change it, becoming people who are generous and sharing, with hearts that are bright and joyful in giving. This becomes a ladder, a path of travel leading towards Nibbana, to knowledge, to emptiness. When we have fulfilled giving, we then maintain moral conduct beautifully. When moral conduct is maintained, we develop samadhi, concentration. Then we enter the outer bark, the inner wood of the religion, and proceed into the heartwood. That is emptiness, which we can come to understand that all things are empty. We must cultivate the perfections in this way first, until we understand and see the Dhamma. Like the noble teacher would teach, when a lay person who wished to attain to Sotapanna stream entry asked how to do it, the teacher then asked them, "Have you practiced giving yet? Do you have moral conduct yet?" "Ah, you have moral conduct. Then practice concentration first, so that wisdom may arise." So may all of you take today's Dhamma that you have heard to contemplate appropriately. May you have happiness and fulfillment of heart. By practicing according to this Dhamma, you will then enter the path and fruits of Nibbana. May you grow in blessings.